Welcome to the talk show dedicated to the wine industry. It's All About Wine. With your host, winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida State's Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Call our guest line at any time during the live show at area code 646-727-3235.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is educate people and make wine less confusing and more friendly.
Broadcasting on blogtalkradio.com from coast to coast.
Basser, Kansas.
Deming, New Mexico.
Ithaca, New York.
Knoxville.
Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
Lexington, Kentucky.
Montana.
Moscow, Idaho.
New Hampshire. New Mexico.
Santa Rosa.
Sevierville, Tennessee.
South Dakota.
The coast of Maine.
The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Westport, Mass.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that. Alba Vineyards.
Blog.10Live.
Boyslip Winery.
Brotherhood.
Camas Prairie Winery.
Candia Vineyards.
Palo de Borghese.
Eagle Springs Winery.
Blackhead Lake Winery.
Free the Grapes.
Grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery.
Hershey Harrisburg Wine Country.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery.
Tommy Bird Ridge Winery.
Toy Soy of Wine.
Prairie Berry.
Rainborn Wines.
Rocky Top Wine Trail.
Sheila Lauer Vineyards and Winery.
Southwest Wine.
Haber Hill.
Ten Spoon.
University of Kentucky Extension.
Vineyard at Hershey.
Vivac Winery.
Walt Vineyard.
Westport Rivers.
Wine Flower.
And around the world.
TheDriftingWineMaker.com. I just arrived in Bali about 3 days ago.
All About Wine is on.
If you have any questions or anything to talk about, we will be more than happy to talk to you about or search it for you or try to find information for you out there, because there is a lot of information out there about wine.
We do occasionally get off topic.
Del Boar Winery.
The most well-known haunted winery in the Midwest.
I've heard voices at the winery.
Call area code 646-727-3235 and let's talk about wine on air. And now, wine enthusiast and industry representatives, All About Wine is on. Here is your host, Ron.
Central Florida, north of Tampa. Rain went through this morning, but it's gone. We're done now for a week, it looks like. So we got some nice weather here, no humidity, which is very unusual for us. But very unusual for us to have this low humidity, but it is gorgeous. We just absolutely love it. Spent all day yesterday mowing the winery. We have a festival coming up this weekend. We also have a class Sunday, and then I came home and mowed the grass here. So I was busy all day yesterday enjoying the nice weather. But Mike's not with us tonight. He has a dinner engagement, actually, that he's going to be at, or he should be at tonight. So he's not joining us. So I'm doing the program solo, and because of that, too, I don't think I'm going to be on for the whole hour tonight. I got a few things to talk about and a few things to pass on, but Not for a whore. First thing, I have myself an announcement. I had a new granddaughter born on April 1st, last Friday. She came in the world about 4:30 in the afternoon, somewhere around there. I can't remember the size. Seven pounds, 9 ounces, I think, is what she came in at. Her name is Charlotte Bell. And my son and his wife had it, so Charlotte Bell Hunt. And she's doing well and all that. I'm going to have to plan a trip up to visit her this summer sometime, I guess, just to see my new granddaughter. Today is National Beer Day. So if you have not raised a toast to beer, then you should. Now, you can toast beer with wine, so keep that in mind. You don't have to go out and have yourself a glass of beer to toast National Beer Day. A toast is a toast. And so, but while I'm talking about beer here, 2015, a little quick review of beer, and we're not going into becoming all about beer and wine. We're just, actually the license for most wineries are a beer and wine license. And so a lot of the wineries now are starting to put in some craft beers, and some of the breweries around are playing with wine. So it's something that's starting to come up a little bit different areas. So if your local winery starts throwing in some brews, that's why. It's the same license, and the taxes run a little bit different, but basically it's the same paperwork for us here in Florida. I think it's about the same for all over the country. So if you start seeing that, but number of breweries in 2015 reached a all-time high of 4,144. The total number of U.S. breweries, it's a record high. Previous record high was 4,131 breweries, but that was in 1873. Wow. So we finally passed. This is quite an achievement. Bart Watson of Brewers Association, beer has always been a hallmark of this country, and it's even more apparent today because of the expansions. Breweries are now opening at a rate of about 2 a day. Wow. 15 states are now home to more than 100 breweries. California, of course, Washington, Colorado, Oregon, Michigan, New York, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Texas, Ohio, Florida, Virginia, North Carolina, Wisconsin, and Indiana. All those have over 100 breweries. IPA, Indian Pale Ale, remain the top styles sold by independent craft brewers and continues to grow faster than the overall craft category. Data shows that locally made, the term locally made is important to over half of craft beer buyers. And also, knowing the beer is made by a small and independent brewery is important to a majority of craft drinkers in their purchase decisions. On that note, I was just reading something the other day about how the big companies are starting to gobble up some of these small breweries around the country, which, you know, to the small breweries, yay, give them credit because they start themselves something, it goes on. They reach a point, the article said that it reaches a point where they can't expand without major money influx because of the fact that they can sell to big breweries, get that money that they need to expand, and still retain their somewhat creative control over what they're doing, but yet still be owned by the big company, helps them a lot. So they can reach bigger markets, they can expand and do it that way. An article was talking about a brewery here in Ybor City down in Tampa, and they said that the same thing there. The guy reached a point where it would take a lot of money to expand and do what he wanted to do. So he contacted the same company that bought Budweiser, InBev, and they were willing to purchase him. And now he's got the money and he's staying on. He's still running it basically and doing everything he wanted to do, but he's got the money. So it's still people are saying, well, you know, that's a craft brewery, but some of them, if you start looking at the fine print or even going online and checking it out, they all aren't really small wineries anymore. They are being bought out. Some of them are being bought out. Craft breweries are part of the communities now, and it adds a neighborhood, town, localized beer culture to it. Thousands of towns are currently without breweries, and so therefore it's something that even the smallest town can support. This is all information, again, from Bart Watson of the Brewers Association. With beer lovers continuing to desire more full-flavored and innovative options from small and independent local breweries, ample opportunities exist. Figures are compilations of data provided by the Brewers Association and different groups. The Brewers Association will release its comprehensive report this month. So we should be hearing something else. If I see it, I'll pass on to you. But I thought that was very interesting. The previous high, 4,131. Now we got 4,144. But that 4,131 was back in 1873. Wow. That's just, that's like 10 years after the Civil War. I mean, that's really, some time back there. So, exercise and wine. We talked about this over and over again. Wine Spectator, current one, newest one, says that wine and exercise reinforce health benefits. It's something that is we've known for some time. They find that people who exercise regularly also train to drink alcohol regularly. And usually it's wine as opposed to other things. People who drink or who exercise aren't overall beer drinkers. The feeling is that it tends to bloat them. And strong drinks are actually losing ground. Data shows that moderate drinkers exercise more often than non-drinking peers, and they drank more on a certain day also tended to mean that they exercise more on that same day. They're finding that rodents, when put through the test, will choose to exercise and drink alcohol also. They don't, if given an opportunity to have just alcohol, they will still run and do stuff and do their rodent method of exercise, I suppose it would be. I don't know. Alcohol also increases levels of dopamine and endorphins. So, and exercise does the same thing. So it's a combination thing that is really that helps each other. Regular exercisers worry about drinking habits, but the researchers stress that if you don't drink heavily and you're not addicted to the gym, then there's nothing to be concerned. There is plenty of people who will have a couple drinks a day and then not go to the gym, but then go to the gym the next day. They said that it is fine and it's not going to hurt you to do it that way. So, latest report out on something that I'm sure we all out there have already have been doing and understand and trying the best we can to continue to exercise and drink moderately. So, Mike bought me some, finally showed up and brought me my wines from Texas. He stopped by at the winery Sunday, and he and his lovely wife were by Sunday and dropped off the wines. I'll share them with you. The Homestead Vineyards and Winery from Ivanhoe, Texas. And he was in Grapevine, but this is actually Ivanhoe's in Ama. It is a Merlot. Homestead Winery Merlot. It really doesn't say a whole lot about this. Very, very sparse label. In fact, I just noticed it doesn't give the alcohol level. I thought that was required on our labels. American Table Wine. Huh. Well, that's odd. Has the government warning on here, which is required. American Table Wine, 750 milliliter. But it doesn't get the alcohol. Wow, that's strange. I thought that was something that was required by wineries to do. He also brought me Peachy Keen. It's a white wine from Suvino Winery, S-U-V-I-N-O, Suvino Winery. It says on this, Suvino in Spanish and Italian, it means your wine. The image of the hand is a symbol of uniqueness, the gateway to the heart, and the mark of a craftsman. They have a handprint on the labels and on the back. Savor a sous vino wine today, or try your hand at crafting a private label vintage at our award-winning custom winery. So it looks like they're open for kit wines or something there. Made and bottled by Sous Vino Winery, Grapevine, Texas. And this one doesn't have the alcohol level on it. Oh, that's something I'm going to have to check into. I'm going to have to see about that. And then, of course, we have a couple more here. Next one is Strawberry Blonde. And it's got a picture of a 1940s clad style blonde in the big bra and the bloomers with bedroom slippers sitting in a glass of wine on the label. It's also great wine with flavors. This is 8% alcohol by volume, so this actually has it on it. It also says a flirt, a wink, and a coy grin. These are just a few of the wonderful things to expect when you enjoy a glass or two of our seriously satisfying strawberry blonde. The tantalizing combination of strawberries and wine will make you purr. Haven't opened it yet, but we're looking forward to this also. But these three, and then the final one that he brought me, and the one that he waxed poetic about on the show when he was telling me about it, was the Chocolate Rose. This is the wine that he said that tastes just like chocolate. This is actually 12.5% alcohol on this. This is a chocolate lover's delight for the enjoyment of all chocoholics. Grape wine with natural flavors added. Produced and bottled by Homestead Vineyards and Winery, Ivanhoe, Texas. While we were there, he brought the wines to me. He said, open up the chocolate one. He said, you got to try it right now. I opened up the chocolate one. I tried it right then, and it really was good. I've had chocolate wines before, and I really wasn't impressed. Chocolate wines, to me, taste like chocolate milk that has had alcohol added to it. It's just not a good flavor. But this is really good. This had a taste of a raspberry chocolate to me. That's what I picked up on more than anything from this. Just a very, very nice flavor that just was good. It was just a good taste and good flavor. I can see why he likes the sweeter wines. But it was sweet, but it was chocolate sweet, semi-sweet chocolate sweet. So it wasn't overpowering. It wasn't too strong or anything, but we had ourselves a chocolate wine, and while he was there, and actually we didn't drink it all, because if I drank it all and bring it home to my producer here, she would have hit me upside the head with the bottle, so I knew better than that. But chocolate wine, very good. So if you're ever in, Grapevine, Texas is the area that he was in, that area there. If you're ever in that area there, check it out, Suvino and Homestead Wineries are both in that area, and some very nice wines. I think they're right across the street from each other. Mike said they're right across the street from each other. So, and we talked about today being National Beer Day. It is also World Health Day. Now, to me, that almost sounds like a contradiction there. Beer Day and World Health Day, but I suppose not, because, you know, World Health Day is a world thing and Beer Day is a national day. So, you know, no conflict there. So a couple things to celebrate, a couple things to drink on. Mark your calendars for next year, and you've got these two events coming up on April the 7th. It is the 7th. Yes, it is. Hope you had a good April Fool's Day. excuse me. I got a new grandbaby, so my April Fool's Day was good. Also, Sunday, baseball season started. We're back into the boys of summer here, which is a good time to drink wine. There's some great wines out there for some. I'm surprised there's not an article written about the wines for baseball. When you're out there, you know, watching a game, and I'm still working on my website. I mentioned a few months ago that I was going to try to get together a website of what all these sport venues offer in the form of wine, and I'll probably do beer since, you know, I'm calling and asking. But I'm still working on that and still trying to get everything together and still trying to find out stuff. But, you know, a glass of wine while you're watching a sporting event, even if you're sitting at home watching on TV, that's it's always a good thing, I think. It's, you know, doesn't have to be just beer and brats at the baseball game. You can throw in some wine there, too. And I think that could be just as refreshing. And, well, actually, I shouldn't say it's not going to fill you up fast, but it would probably be a lot easier to drink that than it is beer after beer. So, okay. Spanish wines. There's a big article here about Spanish wines. We've talked about Spanish wines in programs in the past and what they're doing with Spanish wines and how they're improving and how good they are. And there's a lot of great Spanish wines out there now that that, you know, people say, oh, you know, I hear people come in and say, well, I like French wines, or I like Italian, or I like German, you know. But I don't hear too often people say I like Spanish wines. But here's 8 grapes, Spanish grapes, to look for when you are out there trying to find yourself some wine and you look in the Spanish section. And here's 8 grapes. Let me give you a little profile on each one of these. First one is I believe it's Bobal, B-O-B-A-L, Bobal or Bob Al. No, it's Bobal, I'm pretty sure. Spain's second most widely planted red grape is the Bobal from Valencia, which resembles the Zinfandel in many ways, not simply for its punch and the jammy fruit, but for recent story, the grape's generous yields and concentrated color lead to its dominance in the south. And that's pretty warm down there. You look at southern Spain, it starts getting warm. Bulk shipments for deepening paler wines from cooler regions, many made in the Reposado-like method known as Dubopasta. However, like many workhorse grapes, Bobal has shown it can make noble wines when treated with respect, most notably in appellations like Utel, Requena, and Manchula. So, Bobal, it's a red grape. Look for that out there. Grenache Blanca, best known as the main grape of white Chateauneuf-du-Pape. This green-skinned grape is a variant of the superstar Grenache grape native to Argonne. While it's unclear whether this mutation first emerged, over 80% of its Spanish vineyards are located in Catalunya, where its wines were historically made in a nutty, sherry-like Ranchillo style. Leading vintners today are taking advantage of traits this white variety shares with its red cousin to make both unoaked and oaked wines, which gives it a richness that they say rivals the Chardonnay. The Terra Alta appellation, just west of Perot and Monsant, make some of this grape's most opulent and compelling wines. So Grenache Blanca, G-A-R-N-A-C-H-A, Blanca, B-L-A-N-C-A. Godello, I believe, or Godello, I think it's G-O-D-E-L-L-O. That is Galicia's next darling grape, is undoubtedly the Godello, which makes more richly textured white wines than Albarino and performs best further inland. While these wines are invariably dry and still, they nonetheless echo the Chenin Blancs of the Loire in many ways, from their apple pear flavor expression and mineral-tinged acidity to their chameleon-like variations of character and complexity based on vineyard site, vine age, and degrees of ripeness. Godello. We're going to have to start, you know that engineer, we're going to have to start looking for some of these Spanish wines. These sound good. Graciano. This red grape is Rojo's answer to Petit Verdot, a powerhouse grape traditionally used in a minor blending role for adding color, tannin, and fragrance, but that is now earning rave reviews as a standalone varietal wine. Widely cultivated in Rio and Navarra prior to phylloxera, This variety lost ground to Tempranillo and Grenache due to its frustrating low yields. Most Rioja bottlings are premium wines from Rioja, but the grape's potential in warmer zones has led to increased plantings in the south. So, there you go on that. Malvar, M-A-L-V-A-R. Less than 700 acres are planted to this quirky Spanish grape, almost all of it in the Vinos de Madrid appellation, south of the capital near Guadalajara. However, this white variety certainly deserves attention for its lively and refreshing un-oaked wines. Its flavors have a passing resemblance to Argentina's Torontos and Italy's Frullano, in that they are pleasantly combining a subtle touch of Moscato seductive floral perfume with a bracing herbal tang found in a Sauvignon Blanc. Mencia, M-E-N-C-I-A, with the mark. What's that mark? See, if Mike were here, you'd be able to look up and tell me what that little mark name is. You know, that little thing above a letter that you have in Spanish words. I don't know. He's very good at looking that stuff up for me, but I don't know what that means. But it's got that little mark above the eye. M-E-N-C-I-A, with a little mark above the eye. Once thought to be related to Cabernet Franc, Mencia has proven to be native to southwestern Spain. It is well adapted to the cool, moist Atlantic influence zones, better known for white wines, thanks to its ability to make appealing wines even at low degrees of ripeness. The widest range of styles can be found in the Verzo appellation, from strawberry-scented young Mencias in the Beaujolais mold to more complex and earthy premium versions that taste more like a mashup of Chenon and Lagrange. Higher acid offerings come from the warmer areas. So there you go on that. Perito Picudo. Boy, I destroyed that, I'm sure. P-R-I-E-T-O. Perito. P-I-C-U-D-O. Picudo. Picudo. Picadu. Maybe Picadu. I don't know. This rare red grape from northern Spain, named for the dark and pointed appearance of its berries, make wines whose bright acidity, red fruit, and herbal aromas will appeal to Pinot Noir drinkers. The variety was long exploited for volume in the relatively new Tierra de Leon Dio, just south of the ancient capital city of the same name. It has only recently begun to experience a revival driven by the true believers in its quality potential, especially when sourced from bush vines planted in the early 20th century. And then the last one, Tempranillo Blanco. This is one of Spain's rarest grapes. It's also one of its newest, a red skin albino mutation of Tempranillo that appeared first in 1988 and was not approved for inclusion in Rioja wines until 2007. Very little of this variety exists, and most is used to enhance blended Rioja Blanco wines, but a handful of bodegas do produce Rioja bottlings. These slick wines show great promise for Tempranillo Blanco as a distinctive variety on its own right, with a refreshingly citrusy fragrance reminiscent of pink grapefruit. So, wow. So there's 8 wines from Spain, 8 grapes from Spain that you need to keep an eye on. Look for when you are at the store and see if you can't find them. They do sound interesting. Red grapes are vineyards in Spain. Quickly, 37% are planted Tempranillo, 12% Babal, 11% Grenache, 10% of vineyards have French grapes, and 30% of a variety of others. Exports to the United States from Spanish wines, 57% is table wines. Those are the ones I just read you, actually. 22% sparkling wines, 17% fortified, and 4% are flavored wines, like sangria. So, there's the little bit on the Spanish wines here. I wanted to get out of the way. And, oh, geez, I'm sorry. I had to comparison. I'm going to take a sip of wine. I have a light red blend tonight. It is a little bit of tannins, just a young, refreshing Beaujolais Nouveau style red. Not a whole lot to offer in it or anything. Okay, let me see now. Let me pull up. Oh, no, that's not what I'm going to pull up yet. This is what I'm going to pull up first. Here we go. Missouri Grape Conference, Dangers of Bricks being the driving factor. I had people come in all the time and ask me how sweet a wine is. They, you know, what's your sugars in this? And, I say, why? What is your concern about sugars? And they say, well, I'm diabetic. And I said, well, you know, you just don't have to always look at sugars. Look at other stuff. I mean, alcohol turns to sugars in your body anyway. So, you know, just concentrating on sugars. But this is saying that the learning materials for the 120 people that attended, and including representatives from Stonehill, Augusta, and La Bourget wineries, all of the conference paper expected to be available in the website soon. But the first talk about crush, and then the talk focused on the importance of using factors other than just bricks to determine when to harvest your grapes. It all sounded refreshingly old school, but with science and organoleptic evaluations to back it up. They warned that some grapes can be overripe at Brix readings of 22, and others can be underripe at Brix readings of 23. They also said that when Brix is still going up in late season, you may have missed the best time to harvest because this increase in sugar concentration can result in the grape dehydrating, you know, which simply, you know, let's turn it to sugar and taking out that liquid. They referred to it as Brix fixation among the wineries. In the warmer parts of the Midwest, you can have other factors like phenols and aromatics into the count. But the said that some experimental vineyards, he shakes his Chambortian wines, and if 5 to 10% of the grapes fall off, they probably are ready. So that's how he tested. He just, you know, checks, shakes the wines. He says an order of importance factor indicating the ripeness starts with the tasting of the fruit. And that's, a lot of people do that. I don't think people really determine on bricks. I think they just pop the grape in their mouth. A lot of the wine people I've talked to, when we start talking about that, this, I said, you do a reading, and they said, no, a pop in the mouth. I can pretty well tell right then. Also said compounds, the aromatic compounds that they smell when they squeeze the grape is another good way to find out. And the third is reduction of immature tannins. So he said Brix is actually fourth on the measure when you're looking at picking grapes to get your quality that you want. So it's something we may be seeing a little bit different in the winemaking here, and not that fixation on the sugar level so much and what they're doing with it, but if the grape is really ready to be picked and then throw it into the vat, start doing it. Global warming is pushing wines into unknown territories, unknown terror. I talk about global warming a lot. I think it's something that we need to be concerned about, and especially in the wine industry, but you know, in the world. In my opinion, it's not something we can just ignore. But they're saying that global warming is pushing wines. Many factors make good wine. You know, the grape variety, harvesting, slopes, soil, climate, and so on. That unique combinations add up to create what we call terroir. Year-to-year weather also matters greatly. And in France and Spain, all that, they're really into this terroir and Switzerland also is, you know, the grapes they grow. Traditionally, those with abundant spring rains followed by hot summers and late season drought. This drives the wines to make big, robust, good. Our grapes make big, robust, good grapes that lead into great wines. Temperature is the main driver of the grape harvest timing. In the last 30 years, progressive warming has pushed harvest dates dramatically forward from California to Australia, South America, Europe. In France, where records go back centuries, since 1980, harvest dates have advanced 2 weeks over the 400-year mean. Now, these earlier harvests have meant some very good news, but existing studies suggest that regions here and elsewhere will eventually become too hot for the traditionally grown grapes. Vineyards may have to switch to hotter climate varieties, change their methods, or move their business or go out of business. Since the earth is shifting, so are the terrors that go with it. In the new study, scientists analyzed 20th and 21st century weather data and pre-modern reconstructions of temperatures, precipitation, and soil measures and vineyard records going back to 1600. They show that in the relatively cool winemaking areas of France and Switzerland, early harvests have always required both above-average air temperatures and late-season drought. The reason, they're saying, is in the past, droughts helped heighten temperatures just enough to pass the early harvest threshold. So basic physics is at work here. And normally the evaporation of the earth cools and all that stuff. So they also say that up to 1980, the climate, the climate was such that without the extra kick of heat added by droughts, vineyards could not quite be hot enough for the early harvest. But that has changed. The study found that overall warming alone has pushed summer temperatures over the threshold without the aid of drought. On the whole, France warmed about 1.5 degrees Celsius or 2.7 degrees Fahrenheit during the 20th century, and the upper climb has continued. So that is substantial. There's 2.5 degrees, they say, is this. You know, we'll start melting ice caps and stuff like that. It's warm climate has moved it up and all, and so after 1800, the drought signal effectively disappears. That means there's been a fundamental shift in large-scale climate under which other local factors operate. Across the world, scientists have found that each degree centigrade, 1.8 degrees Fahrenheit, of warming pushes a grape harvest forward up roughly 6 or 7 days. So, with the suggests that a combination of natural climate variability and human-induced warming could force finicky Pinot Noir grapes completely out of parts of Burgundy. Other reports say Bordeaux could lose his Cabernets and Merlots. And they project by 2050, some two-thirds of today's wine regions no longer have climate suitable for the grapes they now grow. And I've mentioned this before. They're saying that Napa as we know it will no longer be Napa as we know it. It's going to be Willamette Valley in Oregon. Montana will be a good grape-growing region because of the warming. Other reasons might beckon. Grapes no longer viable in California's Napa Valley may find suitable homes in Washington or even as far north as British Columbia, this article says. Southern England may become the new Champagne district. The hills of central China, the new Chile. Southern Australia's big wineries may have to land further south in Tasmania. If people are willing to drink Italian varieties grown in France and Pinot Noir from Germany, maybe we can adopt, said the author of this article. That begs the question whether vineyards, or for that matter, anything can just be picked up and moved. The earth is crowded, agriculture, infrastructure, and the land might not be available for enormous grapevines and the vineyards as it needs. And if it is, the soil slopes and other exact conditions of old vineyards would be difficult or impossible to duplicate. Grape harvest only one of the many biological cycles already being affected by warming climate with uncertain results. They don't know what's really happening. Insects, plants, and marine creatures rapidly shifting their range poleward. No one yet knows whether many species or entire ecosystems can survive, and the same is certainly true for wine grapes. Liz Thatch, a professor of management and wine business at Sonoma State University, said, some people may still be skeptical about global warming, but not anyone in the wine industry. Everyone believes it because everyone sees it year by year. It's here, it's real, and it's not going away, end quote. So we are seeing changes, probably not in my lifetime. I'm, you know, my late 60s. Maybe in my children's lifetime, we're going to see some major changes. And definitely in my grandchildren's lifetime. Charlotte, who was just born last Friday, will start knowing the wine industry completely different than what I know it now. And there's no question that that's going to happen that way because of what's happening in the climate. All right. Let's see, there was something else. As soon as I find it, we will talk about that. And then we're getting close. I told you it's going to be a short program tonight. Let me, you know. Nope, it's not that one. Well, you know. I think, well, maybe not, because I got a couple of things here that I wanted to look at. The same thing. Maybe I might close it, but no. Bordeaux winemakers are snapping up Napa estates. There's a lot of the Napa vineyards that are being sold to Bordeaux winemakers. Maybe they should read that article that I just read, and they might not be so anxious to do that. On wines, are additives always a bad thing? I'm not sure if I talked about it. I'm losing track of some of these things here that I wanted to talk about, didn't talk about. Yeah, I believe I did talk about this one. Some of the additives and what it's doing and all that. But, maybe I didn't talk about this one. Winemakers almost universally declined to admit more additives are used in wine around the world today than ever before. People come in all the time and ask me, do you use additives? Do you put stuff in your wine? Yeah, we do a little bit. I think everybody does. It sulfites to begin with. It purifies wine and keeps it clean. Because of that, though, it accounts for the facts that wines today are better than they've ever been. No winemaker has ever wanted to admit to additives, no matter how legal the practice, how beneficial, or how benign or economical. And that's really true. You know, anybody I talk to, if I ask every one of my interviewed wineries as I talk to them what additives you had, and I'd get a very avoiding answer. I know I would. And that's why I don't ask. I think the other day that when a winemaker friend is off the record side, he admitted he uses gum arabic in some of the least expensive wines, which by coincidence I'd praised for the remarkable value. These weren't great wines. They sold for under $7 a bottle, but 20 years ago the same wines would have been undrinkable. Today they serve the purpose that they provide a value for those people on a budget, and they're still drinking wines. And it's wine. I've always said, any wine, there's two types of wine, the type you like and the type you don't like. And if you don't like it, don't drink it. If you do like it, do drink it. Now, if you do like it and it costs you $3 chuck and you enjoy the wine, more power to you. As far as I'm concerned, that's going to get you to drinking wines. And after a while, as you're drinking $3 chuck, and it's not $2 anymore, you raise the price at all. $3 chuck, after a while you're drinking $3 chuck, and you say, well, this isn't bad at all. I wonder how that wine tastes. And you'll pick up another one, and then you'll start picking up another one, and you're drinking more and more wines, and you're getting away from your $3 price range, and you're jumping on up to the $10, $12, $15 range that most people buy, but you're out of that. And after a while, from the $10, $12, $15 range, you'll find wines that are in the $15 to $30 range, and those are probably the biggest jumps in quality you're going to find as far as a price jump goes. Nothing against the very expensive ones, but the difference between the $7 to $15 range and the $15 to $30 range is probably the biggest jump you're going to find in a taste and stuff that people can taste. But power to them. So, you know, if people are drinking wines, and that's great. Gum Arabic, excuse me, Gum Arabic, sometimes called Gower Gum, is a byproduct of the sassafras tree and helps to deal with unpleasant tannins and otherwise rough, rugged red wines. It is widely used in the production of foods, and if you look at food labels, you will see it all over the place. Thousands of winemakers in nearly four decades have used it, and most people don't deny it if you ask them to the face. It's legal, you can do it, and there's nothing off of it, off about it, but if you ask winemakers, they'll slyly say off the record, you know, and that's why I don't talk to anyone about that. There's another additive that people brag about, oak, you know, and that's an additive. That's not standard. The Cabernet Sauvignons are used, and they're pricey because they're oak, you know, you use oak barrels, they're not cheap. The winemakers around the world, this writer says, is a little black box that contains all sorts of things they add to the wine to improve it. The different things that the grapes didn't have in it themselves. And it's evidenced with inexpensive Pinot Noir, more so than any other grape. It's nearly impossible to make a Pinot Noir taste like the grape when using mediocre fruit. So it is played with, and Pinot Noir costs a lot of money, so you know, you have to play with a little bit, and it's a tiny grape and all that, so they do different things for that. And like we found out too, talking to wineries in Oregon, the original Pinot Noir grape isn't really out there. It's been cloned so many times, and there's so many different clones of it, and again, that's manipulation of it to try to, you know, add it to it, if you will. This writer says in the past years, he's written about the broad use of additive called Mega Purple in the production of some expensive red wines. It did not improve such wines, just made them darker and altered their aromas. And there's lots, I mean, Mega Purple is one name. I have seen lots of other names, Red Berry, different names for different wines. And they're all basically the same thing. They're made from grapes. It is actually, Mega Purple is used in cheaper wines and stuff. But the Mega Purple and the different ones that you find are actually made from grapes. They're made from grape skins and stuff. And just a very high Brix in them, very high sugar levels in them. But it adds darkness to the wines, and it does a little bit to balance it out. You know, their main now, Mega Purple, is used in cheaper wines. It elevates the wine from a cheap wine to something that you can drink, something you can enjoy, something you can have with dinner, and put in the price range that people like. Winemakers shouldn't be ashamed of what they're doing because they're all doing it. And we basically all know that we're doing it. I'm not giving away any trade secrets or anything here telling you about this. Just that when you have a wine that is very thin and no depth, no color, anything, adding some Mega Purple or anything else, any other coloring to it, could darken up a little bit. I've had some red wines that I actually have had some blush wines that were darker than some of the reds I've seen, and with a little bit of Mega Purple, it gives a little bit more color. You know, I'm failing to admit that the only way a $5 wine can taste more like a $15 wine is the intelligent use of additives. And so wineries are implying that such use is, some of them are saying it's illegal. It's not any any discussion or anything, it's not illegal. There's nothing that says look up ttb.gov going underneath the wine section, and it is not illegal. So you can do that. But, you know, anyway, if a winery says, no, we never use additives, not true. You know, even something like sulfites, which I think almost all of them, unless they're organic, do use sulfites as a preservative and stuff like that. So, additives. They're with us. They're going to be there. They're saying the more expensive wines don't use it, but the more expensive wines still are going to have oak, which is an additive, if you will. It's not natural. And in a grape, so, you know, just about everything has a form of additive to the wine. All right, let's go back to the network here and see if anybody's sitting there calling me. I don't check. Nope, nobody called. I don't check my switchboard page throughout when I'm doing this alone, simply because I'm bouncing around reading other things, and I don't always look at the switchboard page. But nobody called, so it's not a concern. And let's see, I think I had... No, I don't. Fantasy baseball, sorry. I didn't get on a fantasy baseball team this year because the team I was with, they didn't get it booked up. Something happened. I don't like the daily. It's just too busy, the weekly. So if you're on a fantasy baseball team, you want another player, a weekly team, you want another player, email me. Give me the password to get into it. I will be more than thrilled to join your fantasy, weekly fantasy baseball league. On that note, I am going to close tonight. We've got things coming up here. I don't have my... list of things that people I've been talking to and all that, but we got coming into the summer, hopefully we'll get ourselves some guests on here and talk about barrels sometimes this summer too. It's something that we need to get a cooperage on here. We haven't done that yet, so we will get that done this summer. So for right now, we're going to be done for the night. We do have some stuff coming up this weekend. Sunday, we have a wine class, so I'll be back in a minute and a half.
Hey, this is Mike. Coming up this Sunday at Florida State's Winery from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. is another wine class. That's right, wine class at Florida State's Winery featuring winemaker, vineyardist, cellar master, and tasting expert Ron Hunt. He shares his experiences and educational knowledge of wine in a detailed 3-hour wine class. It's a lot of fun and a great way to learn something new about wine. Some of the topics that are covered include a brief history of wines, wine grape varietals, wine grape diseases, wine glass styles and uses, cork history, evolution and uses, oak aging, wine tasting and rating wines, and my favorite, of course, the sampling of wines and a discussion. It's a great presentation, and it's located in the Florida State's Winery Tasting Room. For more information and to RSVP, which we would recommend, please contact the winery at area code 813-996-2113. Again, Florida State's Winery is phone number 813-996-2113. Florida State's Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Don't forget wine class this Sunday from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. at Florida State's Winery. See you there.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Yep, this Sunday. So if you get an opportunity, if you're in the area, you want to join us for wine class, give us a call first. $25 in advance, $30 at the door. We'll be more than happy to accommodate you. If you call us in advance, we always set up before, and that's why we like reservations. But it doesn't take long. We've had people pop in on us, and we've done it before. So look forward to seeing you Sunday if you're so inclined. And that's it. Have yourself a wonderful week. And enjoy wine. And again, any topics that you are not familiar, that you like to have discussed on the program, let me know. Email, Facebook, anyway, just there's all sorts of ways you can get in touch with me. So let me know, and I will discuss the topics that you suggest. If you know anyone in the business, wine business, any aspect of it, let me know. If you are in the business and you'd like to be on the program, let me know. I would be more than happy to have you as a guest on the program. So, have yourself a wonderful week. Take care of yourself, and we look forward to all of you coming back here next week on All About Wine.
Welcome to the talk show dedicated to the wine.
Wrong one.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida States Winery. Florida States Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida, 4 miles west of Interstate 75 or east of US 19 and US 41. For more information on Florida States Winery, visit the website at floridaestateswines.com or call area code 813-996-2113. The email address is corp@floon.com. That's corp@floon.com. For more information on All About Wine and future shows, please like us on Facebook at facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr or visit our website at allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available as a free download on iTunes and on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time on All About Wine.